SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Live from the Treasure Island in Las Vegas, day two, National Horse Players Championship, and our coverage continues wall to wall. Pete Fornatale, good morning.
Good morning to you, Steve. So exciting to be back here. A lot of great stories developing. We call this, and I'll give credit to my friend and former colleague Matt Bernier, who dubbed this day Moving Day.
That's the golf term for the cut.
Exactly. We've got Moving Day here at the NHC, and we've got a lot of stories. We've got a big leader who is a horse player who's very easy to root for in Robert Gilbert. We've got several players bidding to make history in terms of becoming the first two-time NHC winner. We've got beloved veterans like Paul Sherman in the mix. There's a lot happening. We've got a million-dollar bonus in play, too.
Joe Rosen, the rookie.
Exactly. Little Red Feather partner. There is a whole lot going on. And I can't wait as we get going today to bring all the stuff to the listeners in real time.
Well, and Robert Gilbert already has padded his lead. There has not been a lot of major horses. I just actually sent out a little missive that showed the three horses, the second race winner, Not About the Nail at Aqueduct, Call Me Handsome at Tampa in their third, Ain't Annie Grand at Fairgrounds in the first. Those are the three horses that actually had decent enough mutual returns, combining the win and place numbers, 15-50 for the Aqueduct winner. Call Me Handsome brought back 30-40 combined, and Ain't Annie Grand 20-40. Everything else has been pretty mundane. We've had about 15 races run so far, and the first mandatory is going to come up in about 13 minutes. It's the Tampa fifth race, and this group that we'll get to, a little bit of a strange. I was talking to Frank McGooey early this morning, and this is an allowance, and it's a funny bunch. I'm anxious to look at the board because I haven't actually glanced up, and the early favorite is the logical Tabia, the two from Ian Wilkes and Lothenbach.
Yeah, McGooey, he's always a great guy to talk to. He is one of several players. I'm very proud of the group that ended up at the final table when we did the World Horse Players Tour event. Several of those players, I realized, in excellent spots. And McGooey, with a big day today, he'll be making the semifinals and advancing on, but somebody who's always a blast to talk to about racing in Louisiana and everywhere else.
The 8 and the 5, Dictator and Cash Anova at Fairgrounds in their second race come to the wire 5-1 over a 3-1. That's nice enough for certain people that are taking kind of a grinded out attitude. I can tell you that for those that are going to look at the leaderboard, 67th place is what you're looking to nail.
That's okay, it's not 70th, it's 67th.
It's 67th. Oh, that'll be the cut line. And when it comes back around, I'm going to guess it's in the 80s, and we'll keep an eye on that. Meanwhile, at Gulfstream, they're loading for the fifth, and Gulfstream, of course, today we'll talk in this next hour or so about the upcoming Rainbow Six Force Out. It starts in race seven at 3:07 Eastern. Right now, this is a mile turf group of fillies, three-year-olds, and there's a number of these actually at Gulfstream today. There's three of them going a mile on the grass. This is the first of three, the fifth, the ninth, and the 12th. And of course, the 12th features Cafe Americano, the seeming universal single for people in the six, with Chad Brown and Peter Brandt. Watching here, and you know what, Case, we might take this. Might as well take this if you can. The Gulfstream fifth race. I'm sure some people are involved. You'd don't have a big bunch because Conquest Hard Candy ended up scratching out of this. I take that back, not Conquest Hard Candy. That's the
from the center, Heroic Activist here we go. Gets the first call, moving to challenge as Weekend Madness up on her outside. Moving to her inside as Panther Hit into the top flight. Widest of all is Mega Fortune, who tries to get over from her outside gate. Tapping on the brakes was Kitten's Finest with She'll Do, looking for some racing room. Out wide on the course is Astoundment. She dropped over to be three wide, and she races two ahead of Queen Brunette, who's mid-flight. Then back to the two favorites, Blue Jean Kitten to the inside, Piece by Piece to the outside. Second last is Shiraka, and the yearly trailer is Pardon My Heart. The opening quarter was 23-1 as they roll into the backstretch. Heroic Activist has the lead three parts of a length. Token Pace Pressure from Longshot Mega Fortune on the outside. Weekend Madness is between horses. Astoundment is three wide. Panther Hit is at the rail. Then She'll Do racing a neck in front of Queen Brunette. They're followed by Kitten's Finest, who races ahead of Blue Jean Kitten. Piece by Piece is still unhurried in the blue silks, about nine lengths off the lead, racing ahead of Shiraka, and the trailer is Pardon My Heart. That's the 12 of them with less than half a mile to go. They went 48-1 for a half mile. With the advantage, Heroic Activist, three parts of a length. On the outside, still second is Mega Fortune. Astoundment's had to cover ground well, three wide third. At the inside, Panther Hit has an upset possibility from fourth. Then Weekend Madness trying to get underway from the back is Piece by Piece as they wheel in. Up on the outside, it's the long shot Mega Fortune, who now takes a narrow lead. Into the clear, Panther Hit is loose and charging. Down the center in Astoundment, the favorites never fired. Final eighth of a mile. Up front, it's Mega Fortune and Chris Landero still in front, and Mega Fortune will spring the upset. Panther Hit second. Astoundment was third. Very close after that in 135-4.
That's John Kimmel, and Kimmel sending out a horse for Toby Morton, one of his big owners. This is a painter filly that the Zayats bred, and a nice number here is going to get some people back in the game.
Absolutely. You could hear the cheers, and you could see the smiles after that one hit the wire. Very important to get going well early. The fact is, as the day goes on today, the cap horses are going to get very cheap within the context of this market, because at some point, with so many players so far back, every cap horse is going to be covered. If you can get one early before everybody's firing all their bullets, you have a chance to establish a beachhead, or whatever you want to call it, and get right back into this game. And I think we're going to see that when we do see this leaderboard update in a few minutes after this first mandatory race, which is now coming up in something along the lines of 8 minutes at Tampa.
8 minutes is right, as they head out of the paddock. Not only did you get a bonanza price here, the 41-1 shot, Chris Landeros, who just continues to boot horses home at any price. And not only that, you had the Albertrani, who, of course, is going to try to win the Sam Davis later today. Yep. For Godolphin. But Panther Hit, a Don Alberto, 37-1 second. So even the people that were trying to get the four home, they're going to get themselves a nice pace price.
Points galore, 64 points to the people who had the winner, 22 to the second place. For those that don't know, there is a cap at the NHC. That cap is 20-1 on the win odds and 10-1 on the place odds. Some folks think that means that a horse that's way over the cap isn't value, in the sense that if you have 40-1 hits, you're not going to get all of that 40-1. But again, within the economic environment of the contest, those over cappers are worth more simply because fewer people will have them. And when you can move up the leaderboard alone, you're moving up much more powerfully than when everyone's moving in lockstep.
Looking up at Oaklawn's opener, and one of the most venerable horses of recent vintage, Big Guy Ian, sure, who New Yorkers know for many, many years. M&M owns him now, and the Birdstone gelding, 8 years old, just padded his career stats. And Bayard, the seven-year-old that's kicked around, came
another
originally
vet
from the Asmussen barn. But Big Guy Ian, who Michael Dilger trained for a good long while, a horse that probably a number of people dropped slips on when he started to go into the claiming ranks. He just won the opener at Oaklawn. Now let's look up at Tampa. Let's take a look at the group in here and get a feel for this set as we get seriously underway. And then there's a nice gap. Elliot Honecker is going to join us after the first mandatory. Not until the second mandatory. Got a good 45 minutes between mandatories. The Laurel 6th will be next after this. But let's dive into Tampa. Do you have PPs to discuss?
All right. I sure do.
Well, we'll just quickly run them down. Flash attack for Karamori with Kai Barcoa on the rail, 7-1. Tabia, the Ian Wilkes, Gallardo, 2-1 favorite right now. Tis-Tis, the third. This is Victor Carrasco with Daniel Centeno, 3-1 right now. And you did have a scratch in here, Qualifly, who might have been interesting to people at a 20-1 morning line. Strategic Ekati, Tony Rini with Scott Spieth, 10-1. The 5, Warbathor for our friends Bill Johnson at Stonegate. Up in Fort Edward, New York, 11-1 for this 7-year-old silent name gelding. Then the 6, El Grande Rojo, Charlie Harvat, and Fergal Lynch, big price, 19-1. Longest shot in the field, 53-1 on the 7. Rick Creel sends out Talon with Gary Wales. The 8 is scratched, as mentioned. Metallic, 8-1 currently for Bill Sinkowitz with Sammy Camacho. And then Zafiro, 10-1. And Jose Ferrar riding also for Sinkowitz. And you scratch the 11, and that takes you to the 12. 14-1 on Lord Barna for Kathleen O'Connell, Jesus Caston on the irons.
That feels like a pretty square price to me on number 9, Metallic, Steve, who looks to be improving. And I think it's going to get a good trip. I'm not sure there's a ton of pace in here. Should be forward and could get that sort of stick and pounce trip. I'm pretty intrigued at that number. That's probably where I would be looking to go had I an entry in this tournament. We talked about it so many times yesterday, and it'll come up again today. When it comes to the NHC and what prices you'll take, it's a very different situation when you're talking optionals versus mandatories. In optionals, you're okay to pass live short-priced horses. In mandatories, since everybody's playing those races, it's so important to not only get points, but to not fall behind. And you can definitely reach towards the lower end of the odd spectrum. Some of the good players who sat with us yesterday were talking about willing to basically take horses down pretty much right up until the odds on when it comes to a mandatory race. So that's a little bit of the type of thinking that are going through players' heads. You've got to balance your fear of a price coming in with what you think is going to happen and then make the right decision, and hopefully that leads to an outcome that's going to make players happy after this first mandatory race, which of course is Tampa's 5th.
Well, speaking of making happy players, the place price, going back to Panther Hit in that 5th at Gulfstream, $36 place price, so cap price, a cap placing, right?
Yep, that'll be $22 for those who had in the tournament, of which there were several, I'm pretty sure, just based on the rooting that we saw. That was a very animated route for early in the day. I mean, you can see some fireworks here at some point.
Well, there are a lot of people, I can tell you, that really were a little despondent after day one and really felt like they had put themselves in an impossible situation in terms of getting even into position to strike. The mutual, by the way, on the winner on Mega Fortune, $85.80 and $37 to place for him. So the double cap there as well, the win,
42 and 22, 64 points total in the tournament. That's definitely going to shake things up in the middle.
$64.
A lot of people I've seen online talking about, what's it going to take? What's it going to take? Well, historically, that cut line has been about 175. And talking to different players, everybody has a different opinion. I don't think anybody thinks it's going to be much higher than 185, and I don't think anybody thinks it's going to be lower than 175. And I don't think, in terms of these players trying to chart a course to get to the semifinals tomorrow. Whether you're shooting for 175 or 185 doesn't make any difference at this point. Maybe when you get to your last two plays. But at this point, most of these players, there's no price really out of reach. You can inch along to try to get up into contention if you love something. But if you don't love something, you're definitely going to want to defer to anything long that you kind of like. And again, especially early, because your opportunity to separate yourself from the pack is much greater before you get later on in the day when there becomes such a limited amount of cap horses. You want to try to get something early here, I think.
Well, it is post time, and we'll get Richard Grunder's call, the Tampa fifth. I'm involved. Are you involved in the charity contest?
I'm embarrassed to say I was meant to be, and I thought it was tomorrow, so I will proudly bear a zero in the contest with no picks entered. I didn't want to rush through because I knew we were going to be talking about the races, and I thought it was
If you sign on right now, you could just make the pick.
Isn't it pick and pray? I thought I had to do them all before the first.
I don't know.
I thought it was.
Well, luckily, I was up at midnight West Coast time, and so I took care of that.
You're crazy.
I
did wake up at 3 in the morning, but you're the one who's crazy.
Well, my problem is I typically get up at 4, and so that's 1 o'clock here. So getting up at midnight wasn't all that much more unusual, but you can hear my voice. Voice is a little
playing hurt today.
Whack,
hurt
a little bit. In the contest, though, in the charity contest, I went ahead with Tabia. I was trying to scare up a price, and I suppose the price would have been and a 10-1 Flash Attack. The one horse was sort of my weird horse. This is I ended up using that one as the backup.
The alternate in case there's a gate scratch.
Yeah, but Tabia really fits that profile of, you know, breaking through in December and, you know, now first time against winners. And this is one of those mixed optional claiming types where you've got horses that have won 11 times, 18 times, but they're in for the 16,000. So, you know, a horse that is facing grizzled veterans in this case.
Yeah, it's an interesting little group, and there's definitely a few ways you can go. I decided the story of the race from a handicapping point of view was going to be the lack of speed, and that sent me in the direction I went. But I can't argue with your pick at all, and for the purposes of the charity contest, I'll be rooting for you.
I appreciate that. And this year, what they're doing is they're giving everything. The $5,000 is all going to PDJF. Typically, they've split it up.
Yes.
And you get $2,500 for the winner gets the designate, and
yes,
$2,500 has gone to PDJF. But this year, Tito's is giving the whole $5,000 to PDJF, and that's great, of course. So we'll keep tabs on that. And Ed DeRosa said yesterday that, you know, he's looking to trying to defend his title.
That's right. He did a great job last year. He's made a name for himself in head-to-heads this year as well. I've seen him, you know, beating some professional players in head-to-heads. That's very impressive stuff from Ed, who's a sharp guy whose game continues to improve as time goes on, as you have to if you're a horse player. If you're not getting better, you are falling behind. And kudos to Ed for keeping the knife sharp.
Now, they're still approaching the gate. They're going to run a little late getting this thing off, but that's all right. Behind it, for those of you that are playing, Laurel would be up next. The Laurel 5th is about 4 minutes away. Fairground, 6 minutes away. Gulfstream, which I think is the first stake of the day. It is where Rimska will be a heavy favorite. In fact, let's see how heavy a favorite Rimska is in that. No, she's 1-5, so she's a slight heavy favorite.
Yeah, I'd say there's some money there. You wouldn't say she's a lobster at 1-5. Oh my goodness,
1-5. Choosing here to run here in the Suwannee River instead of at Tampa, and that actually has made the Endeavor that much more interesting. Aqueduct after that, and then it'll be 10 minutes right now, 10 minutes away from the opener at Santa Anita. So there's your menu as the horses get behind the gate at Tampa, and this is the mandatory that gets things going. And the price rundown again: Tabia the 2, Wilkes and the Lothenbach family 2-1, 5-2 on the 3 Tisk Tisk, and then from there it starts to trickle up pretty good. 6-1 on Metallic, third choice; 8-1 on Zafiro, the next number, and then 10-1 on Lord Barna. After that, 27-1, 15-1. I tell you, Werth Bathor. I mentioned Stonegate. Werth Bathor at 15-1 is an overlay because he's going to be part of the. Part of the pace picture.
Yes, that's a good point, and quite a tongue twister of a name as well. Don't try to say it five times fast.
We'll see what that means while we listen to the race, too. Let's figure out what that is. Well, just about set.
And they're off. Warbother breaks for the lead. Lord Barna on the outside, and there goes the speedy Tiz. Shooting through toward the rail and now challenging for the early lead. And the last horse away is the late-running Tabia. They move out of the long 7 furlong shooter and hook up with the main track. And Tiz strikes to the lead now by a half a length. Metallic on the outside is second. Then it's a length and a half farther back. Flash Attack moves through toward the rail third. Warbrother is right there from between horses fourth. Lord Barna, three deep in racing fifth. 2.5 lengths farther back. Strategic Akati is now sixth. Tabia, Gallardo moves him to the outside, and now he's picking off horses one by one. 4 lengths farther back to Safaro, and the trailer is the veteran campaigner, El Grande Rojo. 3 furlongs to run, and Tiz shoots clear to lead the race by 4. Flash Attack is there toward the rail second. Up on the outside, Lord Barna now runs at the leader's third. 3 lengths farther back, Tabia, the favorite. A lot of work to do and only 3/16 of a mile to do it in as Tiz is still the leader. Lord Barna racing second. Tabia way out on the outside, gaining ground third inside the final furlong. It's Tiz. We'll make every pull a winning one. Up on the outside, Tabia surging late. Lord Barna is still there for second and gets the place. Tabia third, Flash Attack fourth.
Unlucky for you not to get second money there, and I didn't think Tiz was going to have any finish just based on looking at the previous sectional times, but Centeno did a great job, held together, and as our man Mr. Grunder said, made every pole a winning one.
Well, and we're looking back to the price. I think second, I think he ended up with the second choice, five to two held as the second choice, and I tell you, Fritz Wiedemann, absolutely right in front of us here, blocking the screen.
We'll have it.
It was Lord Barna that held second.
Did you see Elliot?
Elliot, what?
I did not see.
I think it was the 12.
I had the 3, fortunately, which is a short price, but. Hey,
why not?
Hey,
I got to build my confidence at this point.
You know, there's actually really something to that. One thing I noted when we talked to Dave Gutfreund at the end of the day yesterday, he about halfway, three quarters through the day, sounded like he was mentally defeated. And there's really something to be said for that short price to get you going, especially in a mandatory race.
Yes. Lord, the 12 got second.
So what you've done well in this event before. You had kind of a good but tough finish. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
2 years ago. I was 15th, like $5 back.
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard.
Very hard. And I missed an optional.
Oh,
that's really
I was
rough.
Playing two, and it just got... I wasn't
hairy.
Organized.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah.
Well, I assume...
$5.
Knowing
$5.
You have corrected that flaw in your game, and I assume you've come here super prepared today.
I have, yeah. I'm more prepared. I think each year you get better as far as being organized, and these sheets help where they state, you know, keep track, so to make sure I'm writing down my optionals and all that good stuff. So,
Elliot's pointing at a piece of paper. The NTRA gives out that list, not only the 8 mandatories, but gives you space to fill in your 10 optionals. What about keeping track of the races themselves? Do you use any tools, a spreadsheet like many players do?
Yeah, well, no. I wrote down all my optionals and then went back and wrote the times in order.
How many do you pick out to get to your 10?
15 to 18.
Okay, that's good.
And then I rate them A, B, C, and then I make notes and say, watch the odds, because the one thing I've got to get better at is projecting where the money's going to go.
It's hard.
And I got burned yesterday.
Tell the story.
Well, I was out of – I mean, I had a lot of optionals at the end of the day that I liked, and maybe let's just say there were eight races left and I had four optionals left, well, two of mine got bet down like 2-1.
Ugh, what kind of
so
prices on the morning line?
6-1?
Ugh, yeah, that's hard.
Right? So what do you do? Then you got to either take it or you're forced to.
At some point, you got to take the price. I'd rather take the price than bet a horse I don't like on day one.
Right.
But it is a frustrating thing.
And I try to prepare a lot. So, like, I can't do handicapping out here.
Right.
I need, like, time and quietness and whatever. So, like, my work's done last night.
Right.
And I'm not a good handicapper on the fly. I need like concentration.
It is a skill to potentially develop for an event like this. I will say it does seem like it's an edge to be able to dance a little bit more on your toes. But at the same time, when you're coming up with the 15 to 18 to get down to 10, at least you're giving yourself some wiggle room there.
Yeah. No doubt. And I think each year, this is my fourth time each year. I used to have, like, not anxiety, but you come in here like, this is overwhelming. But I feel like each year I get more organized and have a plan. And I did bring a buddy to help me, stay on plan.
Your buddy who always wears the Blind Tiger shirt?
Yes.
That bar, I was a regular there for a long time.
Really? Oh,
when we
funny.
Lived in the West Village, that was this is how old I am.
Yeah.
When Wi-Fi was invented, that was my Friday. I would go into the Tiger. My friend Louise, Chef Wheezy, was bartending, and I would set up my little office in the corner, and it basically, of course, became an OTB.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, he's a big beer, like boutique beer.
I got to talk beer with him at some
stage. Oh, he's a nut. He goes to like guys' trips for the weekend just to visit breweries.
We need to send him down here when you get him.
My sister,
when you don't need him, we'll talk beer.
My sister lives outside of Boston. And my sister's husband hates the fly. So he's like, let me know whenever your sister comes in. So they get, is it Trulium or
Trillium?
Trillium.
Yeah.
She brings, culty.
Yeah.
She brings a carload.
People go nuts. They go nuts over that cloudy, juicy New England IPA. Yep.
Yeah. I'm like, I'll pay your gas. Bring it down. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So it's a good thing.
Wait till they get up in Vermont. They'll never leave. There's so much. I'm not into it,
but I'm a wine guy myself.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You're also a guy who's involved on the horse ownership side.
Yep.
We've talked in the past about a lot of those great stories.
Yeah.
Where are you right now? Are you involved in any partnerships?
I am. I've got a couple Donegal syndicates. Carrick is still around.
Carrick
are still, great in the stable. And I actually was texting with Tom Morley yesterday. He said Carrick's doing great. So he's supposed to run Risen Star Day.
Arklow's sister is running in the UK and is for sale. I've been meaning to talk to somebody about
this. I did not know
that.
Yeah, wow.
I'm trying to remember her name. It was a crazy story. Sir Mark Prescott bought her, and there was actually a problem on the plane, like something insane. Like there was some sort of accident, and it was uncertain if she was ever going to run, but she has recovered fully. She's been running well over there on the poly.
Wow.
And I would assume her future will be back
in
the USA trying to emulate her siblings, Maraud and Arklow, winning some races.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
it's been a lot of fun, though, as I've said, and it's helped my handicap. Actually, Morley gave me a tip on his own horse yesterday.
Nice.
It was one of the few horses I hit. So,
where are you in the tournament at the moment?
I just hit the mandatory, so 44. I mean, but I got a lot of bullets left, so I got a long way to go. But my kids keep asking, "Are you going to make the cut? Are you going to make the cut?" Because I told them I would change flights. I'd go home tomorrow.
If you don't
make it, yeah.
So they're rooting against you. This is the karma you put out there in the world.
No, but I told them if I make the cut, they get $50 each. So.
Elliot, are you involved in anything at Laurelwood or Aqueduct?
No.
There's actually four tracks going off almost simultaneously. Let's take Aqueduct.
Here in the early going. And there's Quintarelli, who goes on with it to poke ahead in front. Shook him up is down at the rail. And Rodolfo is right there on the outside in third. Coming up now is Dublin Leprechaun to take fourth. Noble Behavior's on the outside in fifth, followed by Teresa's Boy in sixth. Length and a half to Bless and Honor in seventh, followed by Well in Tune in eighth. Flat Out Javian trails the field in ninth, and the quarter was run in 23. And 2/5 seconds, big long shot, Quintarelli And on the rail, it's shook them up. The two of them are right together. Rodolfo on the outside. So it's three of them across the track. And just in behind, Dublin Leprechaun runs in fourth. Noble Behavior to his outside in fifth. Then it's Teresa's Boy, followed by Well In Tune, Flat Out Javian, and The Blessed Honor is now the trailer. The half and 47 and 4/5 seconds. Here comes Rodolfo up now. And here comes Dublin Leprechaun on the outside. As they come down for the eighth pole, Dublin Leprechaun and Rodolfo. And the two of them are right together as they hit the 16th pole. Flat Out Javian's putting in a late run, along with Noble Behavior. They come down for the finish, and it's Dublin Leprechaun and Ray Lewis on a roll. Three in a row for Gutierrez. Dublin Leprechaun over Rodolfo.
That was Gary Siaka, second. Rodolfo, a homebred of the One Pond Stable, one of the craziest families on the racetrack in New York.
That's saying something.
Tony Piazza. That's my horse. He's a nicer horse. The guy's been here 50 years. He can barely put three English words together. People listening will remember the mayor, the dam, Tutti Va Bene.
Sure, Tutti
that
Va
won
Bene.
A bunch of races for Gary, and I thought that this was a W.
I heard it's freezing and windy at Aqueduct. I thought they were going to cancel it almost.
Well, I'm glad they didn't. We're in the nightcap, actually. We've got Minute Mouse in the nightcap.
Nice.
Watching at Fairgrounds and at Laurel as horses head to the wire. Casey, if you could pick up Fairgrounds, it looks like we've got a flying finish and a late move. Late move here from the 8 at Fairgrounds. It looked like it was going to be a close finish, but it didn't turn out that way. Boy, that was too many races that went off at the same time.
A wild 5 minutes here in the ballroom for sure. And there were definitely some optional bullets fired at Fairgrounds, but that was one of those where, just from listening to the crowd, I'm guessing it was a favorite. You could hear people getting excited, and then the horse producing the run on the outside must have been shorter end of the odds spectrum, the way that the air went out of the balloon.
Well, 2-5-2 shots. Dublin Leprechaun breaks the maiden, and as you heard from John Imbrial, Raylu Gutierrez, who was, of course, a finalist for the Apprentice Eclipse, really is making a mark, and this kid's got a nice future.
Yeah, really.
Carlos Hernandez with a terrific ride for Gary set up shop third and just stalked and stalked. And, I thought that was you could tell going into the turn that Rodolfo was running an A race at 27-1.
Horse ran great, just found one better on the day, but definitely one to keep an eye on going forward. And they got to be happy with that effort. It's always rough when
big one at Laurel.
I'll tell you what, though, Hernandez just put up an objection here.
Interesting.
So let's keep an eye on what's going on there. Gulfstream was supposed to go off simultaneously, the stake, but of course, probably be another 8 minutes.
It's Gulfstream.
Well, Elliot, you know what? You play regular.
It's frustrating.
How annoying is it?
And now Santa Anita's doing it.
Well, it's a management directive.
Yeah, it's really annoying, and I've got a family, kids, and you're like, you can't just say it's the race is going off in a couple minutes, and it never is. So
you try to plan around it, but it's whatever short-term economic gain I think they're giving back in terms of alienating not just core customers but new fans. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, you're right about that. Looks like a capper hit at Laurel. I missed that.
$84 winner at Laurel, and the name is perfect. Lord have mercy.
Lord have mercy. I wonder, we didn't hear a lot of people rooting thing in here, but, that doesn't mean there wasn't stuff going on in the other ballroom.
I think Dave Weaver had it. I saw him.
Ice cold exacta. There you go. And that's the kind of an over capper early. That's worth a lot. That's an opportunity to move. Yeah. Where nobody else is moving. Let's look at this.
Here's the
head on.
Well, Rodolfo was coming out. Frankly, Rodolfo was coming out with the left hand. So I don't know what. I'm not sure what Hernandez, unless it's right here.
I don't see anything in it.
Good for him though. Owners and trainers appreciate that.
Make them take a look. It doesn't cost anything.
No.
Yeah, Pete, you talked about like early bomber. I mean, today. If you save your bombers till the end, they're not, what's the right term? The relative value.
They get
you
cheap.
Them, they get cheap.
They get cheap. Because so many people are going to have them.
People are going to start reaching I don't know, in an hour or two, right? Something like that?
If not already. I mean, I think you'll see some people here off the bridle already, and a result like that at Laurel could work to their advantage.
Here's the stake, the Suwannee River from Gulfstream.
41. Race four next.
You got to get back to work. Fiduciary
Values. Number four, Fiduciary Values. Has been. Who is in here?
As they charge in front of us for the first time. It's Peach of a Gal who moves to be second. Rimska pockets up. American Frolic is three wide early. Then back to AV's Mineshaft, third last. Special Event is second last while down toward the rail. And two lengths to the trailer, Vagabond Princess. They make the charge to the first turn. They're chasing Valedictorian, who leads the way by a length. Peach of a Gal on the outside, second. Rimska perfectly positioned early, third at the inside. American Frolic is now fourth, followed by AV's Mineshaft in Special Event. And still unhurried is Vagabond Princess. The opening quarter was controlled, 25-2, as they exit the turn and straighten out for the run up the backstretch. Up front, it's Valedictorian in front by a length. Peach of a Gal is still second. Special Event with rail position, and Special Event making a mid-race move as Rimska left the inside spot open, so she's now in the two-path and racing between horses. Out wide is American Frolic, then AV's Mineshaft and Vagabond Princess through the opening half mile in 51-4. The chess match continues in the run to the far turn, with Valedictorian still in front. Peach of a Gal second, Special Event third. She shuffled Rimska back a couple spots as American Frolic is now into fourth, and Vagabond Princess is last, and Valedictorian is on hold. Then back at the outside to AV's Mineshaft, and Vagabond Princess is last, and Valedictorian is still first. Valedictorian in front a length and a quarter. I Rather Tease Jr. weaving through traffic on the big favorite Rimska. She's up into second. Special Event is backpedaled after that mid-race move as Valedictorian tries to do it every step. Eighth of a mile to go. Valedictorian by front to Valedictorian. She went all the way. That was in high gear, but running out of ground. Peach of a Gal is now third, then Vagabond Princess. Then it's up front to Valedictorian. She went all the way. Valedictorian gate to wire to win the Suwannee River under Tyler Gaffleone. Rimska second. Peach of a Gal.
My table just went wild on Santa Anita. I didn't. It was 5-1, but I think they're playing pick fives. But.
This was a Temple City mare for Epic Racing. Kelly Breen. And 9-1, so a $20 winner if anybody wanted to take a shot against Rimska.
I mean, that's the kind of contrarian thing you could see somebody doing if for some reason, because the horse was so crazy overbet. I'll make a note, too. That was a spectacular race call. That was really, really good. I was sort of half watching, half listening, and Pete Aiello really told you what you needed to know if you were holding a ticket in that race, paying attention to little details. I love that. When you horse players are very divided with this. When you watch replays, Elliot, do you like to hear the caller, or do you like to have it be silent?
I like it to be silent because I think it can skew what you see.
I get that.
Plus, I'm in the house on the laptop, and don't need it too loud. But I do. I think it's just better off to view with my own stuff. So yeah.
You mentioned this is your fourth NHC. How has your handicapping process evolved in the time since you've been coming out here?
I think I can handicap races faster, just from experience. So that helps because it's just overwhelming. Coming out here and knowing that you've got all these races to, and I look at them all.
That's impressive.
Obviously I put more time, but I'll write them like, I say I hate this race and I'll pass or whatever, and I'll star them early on and start to look. So I think just time saving has helped me and just being organized. I mean, the first year I was out here, I blanked the first day and it was just overwhelming.
It's hard. We've had a winner who came in here the first year and was able to get it done, but it's very rare. Most people, it takes them time just to get acclimated to what is such a unique challenge for a horse player. Yep. But it is interesting, as busy as you are between work and horse ownership and your own gambling, you still make this a priority, it seems, to get out here.
Look, I love the experience out here. And I was even teasing some people that are downstairs. It's like a morgue downstairs in the other room. And here, it's, this is what it's about with all the TV screens, the hooping and hollering when somebody's got a big one alive, and this is what it's about. And I like the experience, and it's a once a year thing. And I don't think there's an event. I've done poker stuff, but like, it's just like a unique event. It's not like, I've been to the Derby, I've been to the Breeders' Cup. This is great.
How much do you play live bankroll?
I don't play enough, but it's hard for me to get away and travel and and do all that stuff. But I'd love to. And then for like Breeders' Cup, Kentucky Derby, the live bankrolls sounds great. But my wife likes to go. We dress up, you know, so I can't get involved in all
that. You know, there's more opportunities than ever to play online in live bank events. Might be worth taking a look at
for
you.
That's true. I need to expand a little bit, but I want to do better in this more consistently.
Yeah,
but,
well, it's great to have you here.
It's a lot of fun.
Always a player to watch
and hoping you
can get going here. How strategy-wise are you basically playing today similar to yesterday and just hoping to hit more winners, or are you reaching longer?
Reaching longer, but I've got two cards.
Gotcha.
So I'm going – I mean, I've got a lot of bombs circled for later.
That's good.
So, yeah.
In that mandatory, did you hit that 5-2 on both?
On both.
That's good. Yeah. That's really good.
You're an old DRF guy. I'm a Moss pace figure guy.
Sure.
And it was the Moss.
That's interesting.
The Moss stood out, and I didn't like anybody else. And I don't think people use the Moss figures very much.
They were kind of a stillbirth. There was, you know, the initial, and I had Randy on, and we tried to.
I love those things.
And then there was some, you know, there was some tweaking and to try to make it a little bit more palatable and interesting. And for whatever reason, it just did not catch and get traction. What do you when you're looking at them? Give for the people like, that look like, at it and don't know what they're looking at.
Yeah, like for instance, in this race, I used Timeform, marked it as a slow pace race. Who was the lone speed? The one with the best Moss figure. And it was, you know, it stood out like a sore thumb. And I knew it would take money, but I didn't like anything else.
Do you look at the Moss stuff?
Like a single, I love it. I look at the Moss all the time.
I can't remember. It's no longer, you can't look at it in the PPs anymore.
But
there's a report or something.
You click at the top on Formulator, and it'll say like Moss figs. And I think no one's looking at them.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit of an edge because they're not being promoted. They're kind of a hidden jewel in there.
That's interesting.
Which is fine. But I you know, you and Hogan did those webinars.
Yeah.
And that's where I learned how to use them.
Yeah.
And they're not doing those anymore. So, hey, that's great.
There's nobody left to do them.
Well, I know.
You know, and we did the Stats Race Lens. Gilbert, Robert Gilbert, is
he's
a long time. Right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so is Joe Rosen.
Yeah. I'm a Race Lens guy, too. And I've been, you know, I compliment their stuff with the stuff I use. And they've got some good stuff. And I like them because they're really, you tell them like an idea and they're putting money into it. And there's a lot of backing there. So, but I use a lot of stuff, but I just, they're out there marketing and all that stuff. But the Moss figs are kind of they're a hidden jewel.
Yeah.
How about that? There's
so that was my edge on that. That was my edge on that.
We will let Randy know that that it got a glowing endorsement.
Yes,
a prominent player. Speaking of prominent players, let's take a quick look because there's been some significant movement. Chris Littlemore now sitting third.
Oh wow,
194. And we should note as well that Paul Weezer has moved all the way to 10.
Another one of the great tournament players.
Paul has been overdue for a big sustained run, and it may be happening right now.
Yeah.
Scott Fitzgerald up to 156, and for whatever reason, this thing doesn't want to.
I don't know. Littlemore. I walked by him yesterday, and he just had the program out. The classic.
He's a DRF and a pen guy.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Yep.
He was up there all day yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is incredible.
And making another move.
I've got a laptop and crap all over and use different sites. And
you're looking at six different websites.
Yeah.
We've talked to you about six different websites you look at.
Right.
And he's got the racing form and a pen. And this,
he's crushing it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Clockers.
Well,
yeah.
What a story. What a story that will be. Get him at a final table twice. There haven't been many at two
Littlemore's,
final tables.
Littlemore's second entry is the cutoff line.
Yeah. That's it's
107.20 right now is your cutoff at 67.
I'm jealous of these retired guys. I'm not making an excuse, but I'm jealous of the retired guys.
Come on, make your move.
They got an edge, I know.
Garrett Skiba has jumped up into 50th.
Nice.
Skiba,
nice.
He's not retired, so I got no excuse.
Right over here, the Berg brothers, Andy and Bruce Berg, 110 now for Bruce. He's sitting 57th. Doug Knackman continues to kind of chip away.
Another old
Ray
champion.
Ray Arsenault hit something.
A Canadian.
Ray's up to 119.
Yeah.
And
John Nichols hit
for 41st. I had dinner with him last night. Big John Nichols, Clocker John. He's been killing it lately in his cash betting.
Yes.
And it looks like that momentum has carried over into this contest. That's very interesting.
Paul Matisse has hit for about $50. He's up to 40th now with 121. Adam Aiken, one of the names that bubbled to the top of the Pegasus Challenge late, only to settle back down into the teens. He's up to 132. Marshall Graham sitting tied for 27th. We talked earlier. There's Paul Sherman, 133.80.
He's improved today.
I saw Magui. I mentioned earlier, Magui is going to, there's an 18-1 and a 22-1 that just hit in the second at Oaklawn. And certainly the Hot Springs faithful will be involved in that.
Curious if Marshall hit anything there.
As it happens, Magui just said he felt he was in such great shape, he was just going to fire away at everything he liked, and that was all he really was going to do today.
Yeah, Ron Flatter in the house.
Ron Flatter
coming
across town.
Yep, very nice. It's an interesting looking board here. We've definitely seen some of the movement we were expecting. But, I mean, I think at the moment that the number one story I'm looking at is Chris Littlemore trying to do the improbable make the two final tables in a row. Actually, really try to win the thing 2 years in a row. But just to make the two final tables would be an incredible achievement. I mean, boy, that's going to be something to watch. And it looks like he's going to be playing tomorrow, I would say. I think we can say that anybody over 180, anybody over 185, I'm going to call them good. Do you have a number in your head, Elliot, that you're shooting for?
175.
Yeah, I think that's
175 to 180 is everything. Yeah, what everybody's talking about.
Yep. What's the cut line, right? Like that.
Right now, I think it was at 80. No, it was 107, I believe.
Okay. Yeah.
107.20.
Yep. Well, I got work to do.
Who do you have? You made a play in the?
I don't have my stuff with me, but I don't. Oh, I love the one I like. Scratch. So I got to, which I knew early, but. I kind of like the 9 a little bit.
I think that was Junction on the outside. The August Martin.
But it's an ugly race, I'll be honest with you.
It is. It's SS Minnow ended up scratching.
The Moss horse got scratched. Yeah. It was a great Moss. So.
and was the pace. I mean, that was the pace angle.
Yeah.
I think in the contest, what did I do in here? I think I went with that one. Proud,
but
wild
with my two entries, I'll split them here because I don't have a. I don't.
So
have
that's
conviction.
Smart. When you really like something, you play it on both.
Yeah.
When you're not sure, you split. And will you do that in an optional too? Will you have optional horses you love and play on both?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yep. And I've been better about ranking them A, B, C, and it's not so much if I like them, but it's factoring. I think this is an art, and I'm learning and reading, and your books have been helpful. But it's not just A+. I love this horse, but. Factoring in, weighting your ABs on what the price is going to be.
Yeah.
And that's experience. Right?
It becomes, it's similar to multi-race strategy, but then with a twist.
Yeah.
And I think that's a smart way to approach it. Well, I don't want to keep you too long if you got work to do.
Yeah, I
got to
get
so
something.
So Elliot Honaker, folks, kind enough to join us. Godspeed today, and we'll catch up with you in a bit.
All right, thanks a lot.
Cheers,
Elliot
buddy.
Honaker, everybody. And Elliot, a regular presence on leaderboards. And take a look. There's a magical horse right there. 3880, 1460. Shakedown at Oaklawn, so just under the cap line, the kind of a no wasted effort. Because we've talked about this over the years about taking horses that are 38-1, 45-1. You're not gonna you're not getting anything extra, but
you are and you aren't. You're getting any more literal points, but what you're doing is you're potentially carving out points that some players are going to. Avoid a cap horse that's 20-1 is going to be much more represented in the contest than the cap horse that's 40-1. I mean, I think we saw that with Marshall yesterday. I feel like he moved up alone on that horse because it was such an overcapper, whereas the 20-1, a lot of people end up having. So it really depends on how you look at it. I'm sympathetic to both arguments, but I think at the end of the day, I'm more sympathetic to the way that a fantasy sports player would look at it, which is, hey, if I can look at what the ownership is going to be and have a player that other people aren't, that player is going to help me win. Horses who are over cap help you win tournaments more than the ones that are right at the cap who more people are going to have. Of course, it's still nice to have them.
Let's take a look at Laurel, get ready for this. We're about 7 minutes, and after that, we'll take our first break of the afternoon. We're live, of course, at Treasure Island in the big ballroom on day two of the National Horse Players Championship, and there's already been plenty of volatility, including just now at Oaklawn, and earlier we're now up to about, I'd say, well, we got two cap horses that have scored out in the last basically half hour, and then quite a few others in the $20 to $25 range combined mutuals. So the names that we're seeing moving quickly on the board, and the next update will come after the Laurel mandatory. This is the sixth. What are we looking at, Pete?
We've got, I think Elliot described the race well. It's definitely a little bit tricky to have too much conviction. We haven't seen too many of these low-level claimers. Yesterday it was definitely a higher class of racing. So this is one, you know, some real bread-and-butter stuff that we're looking at when it comes to this next mandatory at Laurel. You want me to run down the...
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll save your voice and run you down the field. Let me just pop it up here with some real-time information so I can get all the scratches and not give out anything crazy. It's Laurel Race 6, is it not? And Earned It, number 1, is 10-1 for Sheldon Russell. We've got number 2, Colmont Fire, at 5-1. Number 3, Sevy, a horse we talked about. I don't remember if it was on air or off yesterday, at 9-2.
Everything was on air.
Yeah, that's right. We just ran. Number 4, Runabout, is your 3-1 favorite. Number 5, Lon's True Passion, an outsider at 20-1, will no doubt take some support based on the odds alone. Number 6 is One Proud Wildcat at 7-2. Number 7, the Mexican bred Grosco at 15-1. Number 8, that was the scratched pace play that Elliot was talking about, SS Minnow. And then the field is rounded out with number 9, Junction, 15-1. And I don't know, what did you do in the contest here, Steve? Did you have a strong opinion, or did you have to manufacture something?
No, I took Earned It. I took the rail horse, the one, and it's more or less a class drop scenario. I mean, this is a horse that's been running in starter allowances, and the last time he was in for a tag, it was for 10 at Laurel last April, and he wins. So he's getting real class relief here, and you know, yes, he's been buried of late, but it's not like you know, even a B-plus race from him isn't competitive.
It's a great point, and you look at the races 2 and 3 back just on numbers, and they're not far off what it would take, and you're getting a square price. I feel like it's funny, it's a little counterintuitive. Ed DeRosa did some research about the cheaper claimers, and they actually do not typically produce cap horses. But it's also very hard for me personally to trust the lowest end of the odds spectrum when it comes to the cheaper races. I imagine going between the historical precedent and common sense, maybe you want to look for something in the mid to low odds range in a spot like this, and you're in a pretty solid spot there with number 1 Earned It.
Well, and getting a little bit more from this group as they make their way 3 minutes to post. You're looking at 7 furlongs, which for nickel claimers is a bit of a taxing distance.
Yeah, stamina comes into play for sure. It's a big difference. It's one of those distances where I feel like it's similar in a way between 9 furlongs and 10. The difference between 6 furlongs and 7 plays like more than a furlong often. And trying to come up with one you think can stay, see out the trip, is important for sure.
Tampa Bay is well into race 6. They're on the back stretch. You've got a couple of short prices that are leading, and then there is a 21-1 shot that's kind of lurking, so we'll keep an eye here. And in fact, Case, if you want to bring up Richard Grunder's dulcet tone, Tampa
I love 6. Grunder, but I question the adjective.
Well, we could give you a little call.
You want to channel your inner Travis Stone there, Steve?
No, first I've got to get over to the. I got to get over to the.
Stay
over there, we
there
go.
Toward the rail, Tuffy Doll swings to the outside and now gaining ground third. They straighten away and cut to the wire. Yuma Tuca on the outside, stay anchored. Is belling back gamely toward the rail and way out on the outside. Here comes Barrel of Destiny, and Gobois is from between horses, might be going best of all, and here is a blanket finish. Barrel of Destiny might have got up too close to call. Five across the track.
What was your call there?
Well, Grunder thought it was the name Tail of Destiny.
It was the 11. It looked like the gray saddle cloth on the outside. Good old Barrel of Destiny.
Barrel of Destiny.
There you go. And how about that? Tony Granitz and Scott Spieth, the Tri-County, and a $20 winner there.
Not too bad. There were definitely some roots going on. Not as many as we're going to see in this Laurel race about to come up, but definitely players very engaged. I think in a weird way, these early races take on that much more importance, just jockeying for position, because these cap horses might come, and they're going to come for a lot of people as the day goes on, and so anybody that you can get ahead of at this stage of the game, that can pay dividends later on as you try to make your way into this top 67 so you can continue play in the big tournament tomorrow.
Well, and of course, you know, for people that wonder, you know, if you're listening for the first time to the coverage and you don't know how the rules work, it's not a new, they don't wipe the blackboard clean. The totals of the players going into the semifinals tomorrow will be the totals, and then the 10 at the final table, whatever they've accrued. And so, you know, we get to that point tomorrow, and I do have, as it happens, Pete, I did this work already this morning.
Looking at tomorrow.
Here's the final table races tomorrow, the seven of them, and I've also got the roster of action for the electives. And what's different about the semifinals tomorrow, there's 10 wagers to be made on any of the 32 races at Gulfstream, Tampa, Laurel, Aqueduct, Fairgrounds, and Oaklawn, through the third at Oaklawn, through the fifth at Fairgrounds, the fifth at Aqueduct, etc. And so after those 30 races, then you'll get your cut down, and then the 10 finalists will play these races, the 10th and 11th at Gulfstream, the 8th and 9th at Oaklawn, 7th and 8th at Golden Gate, and then the 9th at Santa Anita, which is I hope this doesn't become a problem. It's a downhill event, and if there's weather, those are the first races that come off. And I was shocked when I went
That's a risk. They took a big risk by putting that there. Maybe they have some... Maybe they have a meteorologist on the team.
Insight?
Yeah,
right.
They think it's going to be okay. But, yeah, that field could get short, and that's not what you want in the last race to decide the championship. Of course, the winner here walks away with $800,000 and an Eclipse Award for Horse Player of the Year, $2.9 million on the line. Be nice to not have an off-the-turf race be the last one. And it'll be interesting to see. We haven't seen a ton of movement on the Sundays. I love the new format, the final table. So cool. It is a little tricky. People trying to move up in the races on the first half of these cards, it doesn't afford you that much opportunity. I mean, if you're somebody who's in a good position to make the cut, you don't want to forget, hey, it's not just about making this cut. It's about making that cut halfway through the day tomorrow. You still want to grab every point you can today to try to put yourself in a position to be in that top 10. Because after half the day tomorrow, this field, it started at near 700. There's only going to be 10 of them left, Steve.
Well, Laurel, they're just about set and close to locking them up and sending them on their way to this second of eight mandatories today, and then 10 electives. And we've got, I think, one horse still behind. And your favorite, 5-2 on Runabout, an Oxbow for Wayne Potts with Rosario Montañez. And some of you may have heard that wonderful, moving conversation we had with Rosario at Saratoga last summer. You got One Proud Wildcat off the layoff.
And they're off. Runabout just a beach slow to begin. Grosko is out first, Sebi on the inside, and Junction on the outside, follow that early leader. Then it's Lawn's True Passion in fourth. Colmont Fire fifth, one Proud Wildcat on the far outside, racing about six, 7 lengths on the front, about the 3 or 4 path, and back to Runabout, unhurried second last at this point, and Earned It is the trailer. Grosko is the pacemaker, leads a length from Junction as they charge into the far turn run, with Colmont Fire down inside, and Sebi's up close too, 23.81, moderate opening quarter mile. A tempo still set by Grosko. Goes unopposed into the turn run. Junction second and Sebi moving up on the outside. Colmont Fire is next and it's a length and a half more. Runabout now on the two path within 5 lengths of the lead. Lawn's True Passion. One Proud Wildcat ridden along but dropping back and Earned It his saving ground. Last position has 10 to close in with 2.5 furlongs left to go and Grosko still leads after a 46.53 half mile and turns for home. It's Grosko up top. Grosko and a gang of four chasing on. Runabout has worked now to second, and Colmont Fire out of the inside. They're followed by Sebi and Junction with a furlong left to go. Runabout, a beat slow from the gate, but it doesn't matter. Runabout is running away. Runabout by 2.5. Now three from Grosko's hanging well for second. On the far outside, Earned It has gained ground for the back of the pack. It's Runabout to score by 4. Grosko and then Earned It, and close for the next spot, Sebi or Junction.
Well, you're going to get Runabout here that was very strong throughout. Wayne Potts and Rosario Montanez, the Oxbow Gelding, 2-1. But there is going to be a nice boost from that Mexican bred, the Jose Ramirez-trained 7-year-old, 35-1, Grosko, down on the rails. And Grosko hung in and turned back, Earned It, the rail horse that was on a big cut back to 7/8, and Grosko well clear for a 35-1 placing. So some people that reached for the Mexican might get themselves a decent number here. What's interesting is some late tote pushed Runabout into favoritism and down to 2-1. So one Proud Wildcat had been holding, I think, last time we looked away, and ends up at 4-1 and did not run well off the extended layoff. So your numbers 4-7-1-3 in the second mandatory, and we'll wait for prices. And meanwhile, at Fairgrounds, you've had a $27 winner just now, notable, and just looking here and pull up the, I've got all the quick sheets, and we'll see who that is. The 7 in the Fairgrounds, 4th, Sea Island Surprise. And Merrill Shearer, the great Merrill Shearer, scores 27-40 for Merrill fans with Colby Hernandez. And that was in a 7-horse field. So the $27 mutual in a fairly short field at Fairgrounds, that's not going to make too many people unhappy that went in that direction. And you had Xena Rules, $10 for place. So some nice mutuals. That Mexican held on for second at 35-1, Grosko.
Unbelievable. And I think people could be looking for either these overcampers or the price horse in the short field. Again, if I were giving somebody advice, I would say if you can come up with any reason to play some of these horses who are going to be underrepresented.
30-20 to place for the Mexican.
Lordy. Lordy, Miss Claudie. That's a serious price.
660 and 420 for the win place on Runabout. So
funny situation where, yeah, you're better off having the second place finisher, even though you're capped at $22. You're still doing significantly better than the winner. And it's interesting. Some players will just sort of understand that math and intuitively gravitate towards long shots, understanding that that can happen and it gives you a little bit of an extra edge potentially. Others, and I think I fall into this category, it's just so hard to play a horse that you don't like in a mandatory regardless of the theory behind trying to catch the place price that pays more than the winner.
Well, and watching at Aqueduct as well, as you had a runoff winner, and that one, quick glance here, Bluegrass Jamboree for Charlie Baker with a Sugar Maple Farm product. Five-year-old mare. She was 2-1, and we'll look for the runner-up coming across the wire. And there's a long wait, as it happens. And while we wait,
really
while
is.
We wait for the place horse, and seeing Sugar Maple, and of course John Nayrud, long association with Sugar Maple. And yesterday, if you didn't hear me mention it, the wonderful news that the Belmont Sprint Championship, which always felt kind of innocuous as a name.
Very generic name.
Will be renamed for John Nayrud.
That's
and,
super cool.
Really nice. Really nice. Noble Freud was second. 1-5-3-2 at Aqueduct. No big balloons in the Aqueduct fifth. A little past halfway now in New York. Santa Anita underway. And this is the second at the Great Race Place. We're looking around. 9 minutes to the third at Oaklawn and 17 minutes to Tampa's seventh already. Gulfstream, we should note, is 3 minutes. On the board, it's 3 minutes. But the Rainbow, six. And, you know, Casey, we are right at the top of the hour. They're leaving the paddock, or they're on the walking ring. There'll be a few minutes. Let's take the break here, Case, and come right back, and we'll get into hour two as the Rainbow Six pool. It's only at $5 million, so they'll wait 20 minutes if they have to get it to the number that they're looking for. And at those of you that were following Santa Anita, you just had the two-horse romp home, Portal Creek at 5-2 for Bob Hess and Paradise Farm. Back to Treasure Island after this. We're an hour into day two at NHC. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and catch the summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.